Adobe Airstream, the online art magazine. This is Adobe Airstream Radio. Art, film, music, design.
Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Accomplished faculty who understand what it means to live the life of an artist. Creative students. Hands-on learning in a vibrant city for culture. See us on the web at santafeuniversity.edu. Santa Fe University of Art and Design, where creativity is our business.
I'm Ellen Berkovich for Adobe Airstream Radio, and my guest today is Elizabeth Armstrong, curator of contemporary art and director of CAMP, the Center for Alternative Museum Practice at Minneapolis Institute of Arts. Liz Armstrong organized the exhibition More Real, Art in the Age of Truthiness, which opens at Site Santa Fe on Friday, July 6th with a weekend of special events, followed by a public opening on Sunday, July 8th from noon to 5 p.m. The show will travel in March 2013 to Minneapolis Institute of Arts. Liz, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So explain to us first, what is truthiness?
Truthiness is a term that Stephen Colbert started to use in 2005 on his first show. And it basically means the preference for what you want to believe is true rather than something based on observable fact.
And Stephen Colbert was using this to relate to politics.
It ended up going that way, but his very first show featured this word. So it also set the whole tone for his program, which, yes, tends to look at the slippage of fact and fiction, especially in politics, but I think he takes it further than that.
So when did you get the idea to organize an art show around this idea?
Well, I'm always looking for themes that strike a chord, and I think around the year 2000, when I moved to Southern California, I started really reacting to the appropriated architecture and the appeal of theme parks, and also thinking about when I was in school, simulacra was a kind of theory that Baudrillard and Derrida were writing about, and suddenly I was living in a world where every day there was a kind of hyper-reality to the physical environment that I realized was paralleled in our culture. And I just started thinking about it. It took me a few years to really see how hyperreality corresponded to truthiness. And then I'd say the really big turning point in my deciding I have to do a big show on this was when I read the statistic that more people turned to watch Jon Stewart, a fake news show, to get the real news. That was around 2005. I think Colbert's first show and the word truthiness was coined in 2006.
So at the time that you were putting these ideas together, were you noticing also that more artists were working in a political context or trying to make commentary on global events in their work?
Well, there's that aspect of and change in art for sure, but I also was interested in how many artists are making using trompe l'oeil again, kind of playing with authentic fakes, that notion of reverse ready-mades. There was also an interest in how film affects our reality, and so lots of artists started appropriating film, and of course the way that we all can now play with digital imagery and make any photograph look fake or more real became a kind of through line.
So share your process a little. Did you begin to select artists? Did they arrive to you kind of intuitively based on...
You're asking all these hard questions. Because the thematic shows are the most difficult. Certainly I had certain artists in mind who I thought were doing this brilliantly in their work. And there's also certain pieces that were touchstones. So Inigo Monglano Avalle had created this phantom truck that was in Documenta 5 years ago. And it was a real, physical, to-the-inch creation of one of the weapons of mass destruction that got us into the Iraq War, which turned out to not be based on fact. So here was this unreality that totally affected a reality, and he makes it real. So it's like the elephant in the room, and it's in the show. Artists like Ai Weiwei, who play with... his Neolithic vases had always struck me as really fascinating. So are they really Neolithic? And if they are, how scandalous to paint them bright colors and, you know, dip them in industrial paint. Of course, he's referring to so many questions about modernization in China, what's happening to their own cultural patronage, What does fake even mean? That's actually the name of his architecture firm. He has another practice. And then artists like Omer Fast, who look at film and how we think, and our memories often now are affected by film because we all grew up with film, and it has maybe as much impact on our lives as what we used to think of reality did.
So Ai Weiwei spent time last year in prison in China, and even today, I just read a few hours ago that a Chinese delegation walked out of the documentary being screened in the UK to protest. Had some of those developments happened after you began organizing the show and arranging loans? And speak a little to the fact that an artist in here is actually somebody who is truly in political peril.
Correct. Yes. He was already on my list, and I had started working on a loan. What changed, perhaps, was that I worked more closely with his studio after he got out of prison. Just one wants to be extremely sensitive that you're presenting the work of someone carefully who, I mean, all artists, but someone especially who is in a dangerous political situation. Working with Site Santa Fe, and one of the things I love about the partnership with Site Santa Fe is they have a really young team of educators and programmers who are coming up with an interactive site where you can create your own labels, maybe make up titles, sort of become part of the fabricated reality.
For viewers will be able to do this online in particular.
But we're trying to do both. Uh-huh. Yeah, and then we'll feature the best interpretations because reality is your own definition and what you make it. So it'll be really fascinating to see how people define the terms and the objects in the show. There's certainly a move away from biennials because they've become almost prosaic. There's so many of them. However, and camp is really something separate. That is this notion of alternative museum practice is just something I think all of us museums have to do to keep alive. I mean, museums are in huge transition. They need to be. They're still based on a rather traditional model, to say the least. Site Santa Fe has none of those issues. They're a young, open art space, like a Kunsthalle. So what I like, in terms of my work at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, just partnering with Site Santa Fe is an alternative museum practice.
So Liz, tell us about the book that is going to accompany the exhibit, More Real Art in the Age of Truthiness.
Well, this is the kind of exhibition that demands a partner in text and interpretation. And we were talking earlier about how you label objects in a show, and I don't like to have too much verbiage, but there is so much to be said about this topic, and there are fascinating people writing about it. And I got together with an historian of science, a philosopher, a cultural critic, and actually a whole group of other people to talk about this show, and that led to a really interesting book that takes about five different runs at what shifting reality means in our culture today and why it's happening and what the future might look like.
So what can you tell us by way of preview? Because when you were saying that, you made me flash on Dave Hickey when he was curating Beaumont, I think it was 1999 or 2000 at Site Santa Fe, and he came at one point and gave a talk about Thomas Jefferson and democracy and beauty. Mm-hmm. So what are people saying about truthiness or fictioniness?
I think George Washington shows up, who Dave Hickey likes to talk about. Truthiness. But I would say one of the issues that a lot of our writers have worked their way back to is in the Enlightenment, the beginning of the Enlightenment, and how, in a way, we are perhaps witnessing the end of European Western Enlightenment as we know it. And this sharing of common beliefs and truths, which was something understood and shared kind of by the Enlightenment, the history of science, you know, recent developments throughout our culture and the humanities, is slowly dissolving.
When will More Real travel to MIA?
It will open there in early March, March 3rd, 2013. It sounds far away, but it'll be here soon.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Also here today is Irene Hoffman, Phillips Director and Chief Curator of Site Santa Fe, which is co-organizing the More Real exhibit.
had we planned this at any given moment in our last, you know, 3 or 4 years, it would resonate in a really interesting way with many things that were happening in the culture. If you think about a show that is looking at what is true and what is untrue, what is a fiction and what is reality, you will find examples of what this word, this almost kind of silly word, truthiness, means. That basing decisions, believing things based on maybe not so much information or very little information, might have a kind of pleasure in that kind of deception.
Well, one of the things that interests me about this is that it raises that question of when people come to see visual art, do they have a hope that it's going to be something credible, that they can believe in it, that they're going to have an authentic experience? And does a show of contemporary visual art that's based in the premise that we sometimes like to believe things that maybe aren't true, does it muddy the waters about what people's expectations are of the arts and discourse?
I don't think so. The show's intent is not to trick people at all. There is a kind of pleasure in seeing something and believing one thing at first, but then sort of it revealing itself in a different way that will be a delight, I think, for our audience. And it really isn't about trying to trick you, but maybe to ask you to look at the world a little differently and ask more questions, perhaps. And through a whole range of approaches to this topic, we hope that there will be quite a discourse.
So address that from your seat as curator, because you touched on my next question, in that so often in the media we encounter people shouting at each other, mm-hmm. and there are often really barriers to communication. And in this case, how is the art hall going to be an aid to dialogue about such issues as fact and fiction and themes and authentic experiences?
My experience of all of these artworks so far, I have found that people they're delighted with the work. It's exciting work. They want to share their own stories of their own experiences that are more real. There is something so topical about this exhibition and the works in this exhibition that there are so many links to people's individual experiences out in the world every day. The work elicits a conversation. So the dialogue really can happen right in the gallery, and we've already seen this is work that sparks it.
In Santa Fe and at site, as you of course well know, 2012 would, in site's history, have been a biennial year.
Yes.
So tell us why you have elected not to mount a biennial and instead to go with a show like Morreale.
I arrived here not even 2 years ago, and one of the things that I was asked to really consider as I was coming on board was site's biennial and exhibition program. And I think for a lot of reasons, we have found in recent history that at site and at other institutions that the concept of a biennial has lost its potency. And so I want to really focus on developing exhibitions that will travel. It gets our name, our city, out in the rest of the country, and really re-looking at our biennial and coming up with a new signature. It'll be an international exhibition, big international show, major artists, and we want it to rival those kinds of shows in your memory.
So talk briefly about what architect Greg Lynn is going to be doing by way of intervention to create the setting, so to say, for Morreale at Site Santa Fe.
Right. So Site Santa Fe and myself, we came on board on this project a year ago and joined Liz Armstrong and the Minneapolis Institute of Arts in the final year of planning this exhibition. The checklist at that point, Liz was still working on it, and we had some great discussions about the artworks, the kind of scale of the show, which pieces might be new commissions. And one of the things that we came in on the ground floor with is a discussion about the kind of new commissions, and would there might there be an architect who would be involved? And we both knew Greg and made a visit to him, shared with him the exhibition. And, you know, he is an architect that is looking at building and building materials in a totally different way. There are no corners in his buildings. Everything is modeled on the computer, and it looks to a new future of form, of building possibilities. Building techniques have yet to catch up to Greg's ideas.
Irene, at Time Lapse, which just concluded, you curated a work by Yves Sussman and Rufus Corporation, Algorithmic Noir, which again was a film that had a continually changing ending. And here, visitors will see a much earlier work by her that really put her on the map, 89 Seconds to Alcazar. Can you talk about that and the global level of art that this show is going to be bringing to site?
Sure. So yes, Yves Sussman does return to site with this extraordinary work that brings a very famous painting to a new kind of reality. And so we see all of the characters in these gorgeous costumes moving down the hall and moving into position. And it brings to life a painting that we know well, but it also, I think, brings to light, this just reminds us that painting, and painting such as Velázquez's painting, it's an early example of more real. So, you know, from Ai Weiwei, Thomas de Monde, Yves Sussman, Leandro Ehrlich, Inigo Monglano Avae, one of his largest scale works will be here. There are sort of two generations, artists working on many continents and many forms of media will be part of this exhibition, that at every turn there's another way to define more real and to define this word, truthiness.
Irene Hoffman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are my own. Seeds of Knowing.
Up next, from Adobe Airstream contributor Don Simpson, our Austin music feature. Armed with an oral menagerie of heartfelt lyrics, folky guitars, brass horns, violins, glockenspiel, electric bass, and indie pop drums, Little Low combines the lyrical storytelling of folk music with progressive rock complexity and indie pop stylishness. This extremely talented Austin sextet formed in early 2010 and have already created quite a buzz. One listen to this next track called Gospel, and you'll certainly understand the hype.
Thank you.
For more information on Little Low, including a free download of the tune Gospel, check out their website at www.littlelowmusic.com.
Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Accomplished faculty who truly understand the spark, the moment, the decision to become an artist.
There was something about being an artist and dealing with the unknown all the time and putting yourself out there, that it was a physical activity and an intellectual activity, and that's when I decided I wanted to be an artist.
They've experienced firsthand how an artist's career can unfold spontaneously.
I had been working for various local newspapers, and then I began working for some national magazines, and I had joined an agency. And at one point along the line, I realized I was doing my work. I was doing photography work. I was doing editorial work. It was quite satisfying, quite wonderful.
They grasped the power of legacy and identity.
Smoke Signals has made my whole career. It came out 14 years ago, and it's still the movie that I'm best remembered by.
They've navigated the intersection of commercial and artistic success.
My newest book is called Sky Burial. It came out in 2011. It's done amazingly well. It got reviewed in The New Yorker in the summer in a big review. That was pretty exciting. It was listed as a best book of poetry through the San Francisco Chronicle, The New Yorker, and Library Journal. So it's been amazingly gratifying.
They know sometimes the most unlikely events can launch an art career.
Probably the first project that was the one that began it all was a project on drugs and prostitution in Washington, D.C. and New York City. And I spent about 4 or 5 months, lived on the streets part of that time, and that's when it happened.
They know that a project born in a dream can lead to a spectacular outcome.
Smoke Signals was something that I dreamt to make in 1993. It was based on a collection of short stories. The movie was made and distributed by Miramax, and I traveled the world doing film festivals. Matt Damon and Winona Ryder and Harvey Weinstein were at the premiere. What it's done for me is it's still the thing that people most remember me by.
They know that as an artist, you have to seize the moment.
I was in New York in my early 30s. At one exhibition in particular, at Art in General, it was called Constructive Paintings, a stranger came up to me, one of the attendees of the exhibition, and she said to me, you know, I so look forward to seeing your work. I look for your name in the paper to see if you're having shows, and I anticipate your shows because I am really always curious to see what you'll be doing with your work.
They riff on the unexpected.
My best friend on the street, when I was doing working on a documentary project on drugs and prostitution, his name was Angelo Boone, and he was a junkie. And I remember we were in an oil house, and he said to me, Tony, you keep taking these pictures. You keep taking these pictures. So you can show the kids what doing drugs is really about.
As teachers, they have the power to transform the lives of their students.
When I was in college, as an undergraduate, I studied with a Czech poet named Miroslav Halov. He took me into his office one day and he said, you are a poet. And then he said, you have an absolute responsibility with this gift. Don't sit in a cafe all day with a beret on your head, writing about sitting in a cafe with a beret on your head.
They've learned the joy of creation is rooted in generosity.
As photographers, we take, and I think it's always important to try to give something back.
Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Accomplished faculty who understand what it means to live the life of an artist. Creative students. Hands-on learning in a vibrant city for culture. See us on the web at santafeuniversity.edu. Santa Fe University of Art and Design, where creativity is our business.
I am free.
I'm David Darcy for Adobe Airstream Radio. Rome is camera ready for the kind of film that Woody Allen seemed to have wanted to make into Rome with Love. It's a city where you can fall in love, where Americans can wonder at the kind of beauty and history that are anything but American, where you can get lost by taking one wrong turn, and you can try to put your own twist on the most extraordinary of places, as if it needed something like that. Does the city of Nero, Michelangelo, and Mussolini need Woody Allen? Allen seems to have thought it did, So we get an ensemble of couples whose lives intersect. It's a lot like Midnight in Paris, except these characters all live in the present time. And the romance here is more about the accidents of randomness in a city where everyone's some kind of traveler than it is about nostalgia for a Jazz Age American expatriate culture among legends from Picasso to Gertrude Stein to Ernest Hemingway. The only legend here is Roberto Benigni. To Roam with Love isn't Woody Allen at his best, but watching it, you may think it's Woody Allen at his most Woody Allen. That's not necessarily a compliment these days. Allen's now playing an erotic father in his 70s instead of an erotic single guy. And the younger men, like the earnest young architect Jesse Eisenberg, remind you of Woody Allen somewhere toward those earlier years, and there are many of those years to draw on. You get the feeling it could be anywhere. Maybe that's why Rome is in the title. Oh, and this time, the money for a Woody Allen film, or at least some of it, came from Italy. And there's Alec Baldwin, as a middle-aged architect who haunts scenes with lovers. Oh boy. Do the Italians have a word for ham? Let's just say his performance is pure prosciutto. Haven't there been enough martyrs in things Roman without having to add the audience for this film to the list? Be thankful for Penelope Cruz as a prostitute who knocks on the wrong door and sets mayhem into motion. She, as you know, is a Woody Allen veteran. There's an improbability here that at the best moments, and they are rare, can find its own way between screwball comedy and commedia dell'arte. But this film about the Eternal City is long, and it seems eternal. Why? Because you've heard so many of these jokes before. I can tell you one thing. It won't fill the arenas. The film is To Roam with Love by Woody Allen. For Adobe Airstream Radio, I'm David Darcy.
You've been listening to Adobe Airstream Radio, the voice of Adobe Airstream online. Music for Adobe Airstream Radio, Freedom, featuring Snowflake, by Eshar, courtesy of ccmixter.org, under a Creative Commons license.
I awake to my freedom. Give it birth from within.
Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Accomplished faculty who understand what it means to live the life of an artist. Creative students. Hands-on learning in a vibrant city for culture. See us on the web at santafeuniversity.edu. Santa Fe University of Art and Design, where creativity is our business.